Coffee with Fleur podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on the lands on which we've recorded each episode, which is the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to their elders, both past, present and emerging.
Welcome back to Coffee with Fleur. Today we have a very special episode for you with our first ever interview. A couple of weeks ago I sat down with Lael Wilcox. Lael is an incredible athlete, an ultra-distance cyclist, which means she races and rides thousands of kilometres in every adventure, takes her across continents, and recently has taken her around the world. In fact, she broke the women's world record for cycling around the world. Yes, the entire world. An incredible feat, one which took all her physical, mental and emotional resources. We sat down a couple of weeks ago, had a chat with her and went through all the different aspects that she brought to that ride, whether that's positivity, adapting to change, connection with others, everything we talk about needing here to maintain and build our personal well-being and resilience. Now, Fleur couldn't make it for this particular conversation, so what we did was I recorded it with Lael, then Fleur and I listened back to it, and she reacted to what Lael had said. She picked out parts of our conversation which resonated with her, and I hope they resonate with you. So, Fleur and I at the end of the episode, but for now, sit back, maybe order a large coffee, and enjoy me talking with Lael Wilcox. Today we welcome a legend of the ultra endurance cycling world, Lael Wilcox. From Anchorage, Alaska, Lael started commuting by bike in her 20s. Within a year, riding to work became riding across the country and then all over the world. She began bikepacking ultra-distance racing in 2015 and holds the women's records for the Tour Divide, which is a race along the length of the Rocky Mountains, and the Trans Am, a race across the United States. In 2024, Lael took on her biggest challenge yet, cycling around the world, yes, the world, in a ride that took her 29,169 kilometres in distance travelled, 191,987 meters in elevation gained. I'm laughing because that's over 21 Mount Everests, and 108 days, 12 hours, 12 minutes to complete, with no rest days. In doing so, she broke, no, smashed the women's around the world record, built a community of cyclists who shared her journey with her, podcasted her adventures every single night, and inspired countless people around the world, including me. She's the most resilient and positive person I've ever met, and passes on that enthusiasm to new riders in her Komoot Women's Rally events. In an overloaded life where technology makes it seem that the world is shrinking every day, Lael reminds us that there is a whole planet out there waiting to be discovered. Please welcome one of the world's last true adventurers, Lael Wilcox.
Oh, what a kind intro. What a treat to be here. And I'm so sorry I missed you in Australia.
Oh, that's right. That's fine. When the Around the World route came through Australia, I was planning to ride with Lael. We'll talk, get into how you organized all of that. But through a bizarre ranger event, which is a long story for another time, we missed each other. So thank you so much being here today, Lael. Really appreciate it. And perhaps given all of that, maybe I should ask you, where are you in the world and what have you been up to recently? It looks like a fabulous day where you are.
It's wonderful. So now I live in Tucson, Arizona. So it's the desert, almost to the Mexican border, the opposite of Alaska. And today I had a 160-kilometer road race in Tucson with 10,000 people. And it was incredible. We started at 7 in the morning and I finished in less than 4 hours. crazy. It was like, you know, and I got to draft with people, which I wasn't allowed to do in Around the World. And it was like time travel. It was so much fun. So I finished, I think, about 3 hours ago. And what a day.
I'd be lying down on the sofa somewhere. So thank you very much for waking
me. I did have to have a cup of coffee.
Absolutely. Well, coffee with Fleur, that's what we're all about here. Yes, so you go for it.
That was perfect. But yeah, I've been home. I guess I finished Around the World about, just over 2 months ago. And, you know, I thought I would be sick of riding, and it was the opposite. All I wanted to do was bike. So I've kept it up, not 12 hours a day, but I'm happy if I'm out for, you know, 5 hours a day and doing little trips with my family and friends, and just wrapped up the Kmut Women's Arizona rally out of my house last weekend. And it was, so it's our 8th women's rally. I've been organizing these with Kmut, the navigation app, and we always have it set up. So the ride's like 650K, mixed terrain, gravel and pavement, lots of climbing. And we ride for 8 days, but the format is such that we all start together. And the only goal is to finish or make it to the finisher's party. So women go their own pace and form groups and decide where they want to camp, what they want to eat. And it's like a rolling community on the bike. And so this is the second we've done out of my home. The rest have been in Europe. It was so much fun.
Sounds wonderful. And I think I've read a bit and listened to a bit about the women's rally rides. And the thing that strikes me is that it's all about new riders challenging themselves, pushing some boundaries and getting some personal growth because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the riders have never camped, never gone bikepacking, never ridden, you know, long distance. So a lot of firsts out there, but then also some come in with a lot of experience, but you rarely in bikepacking get to do things with others. It's such a kind of a solo pursuit so often. So, and I mean, I really started them because, you know, I'd show up to race starts and I'd be the only woman for one of three, 10% of the field or less, definitely. And I thought, well, I think women want to do this stuff. I just don't know where they are or why they're not here. So I thought if I make a specific event, maybe they'll show up. And I found that that's really true because, you know, the age range we've had 19 to 70. And then these riders are so inspiring for me, and they're in different stages of their lives. Some of them have kids, some of them have grandkids, some are, you know, in school, some are retired. And so I think that coming together, they feel like they might not have thought of doing this on their own, but they want to take on a challenge with a group around them. And that way it feels exciting, but also not quite as scary.
Yeah.
So it's been really, really cool.
A lot of shared confidence being built with that.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should explain that bikepacking is, you're basically carrying everything on your bike. It could be a tent, it could be a bivy bag, and you cycle all day and then find somewhere to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You carry the stuff you need to survive, you know, for an overnight at least. So some tools, clothing, something to sleep in, but you can keep it pretty minimal too.
You're quite away from maybe in the bigger towns. You're out there in the hills, out there in the mountains, truly away from all the distractions of the modern world.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's such an incredible way to travel. You get to see so much. And, you know, it's like this, the Around the World was my first time in Australia, and I was amazed. It is so remote. It's more remote than Alaska, where I'm from. You know, it's like 22 million people in the whole country. I didn't really have a concept for what that would mean until I got there. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of space. It was so cool.
Talk us through it. We've briefly mentioned what bikepacking is, but what's ultra endurance bike racing, and what was your route? Which countries did you visit, and how on earth did you keep going? Wow, I've got so many questions.
Oh, so much fun. So ultra endurance bikepacking, generally it's the continuous clock. So once you start, every minute counts. And that was the same for Around the World. And then I had a list of like 5 rules. I had to start and end at the same point. I'd ride a minimum of 29,000 kilometers. I had to hit 2 opposite sides of the globe. So for me, that was Madrid, Spain, and Wellington, New Zealand. I had to either choose to ride east or west. I rode east. And I couldn't zigzag back and forth, and I couldn't draft off of anybody. So I couldn't get any advantage from wind block. But with that, I thought, well, I can invite people to ride with me. They just have to ride behind me. So in my ride, I had this open invitation for anyone from around the world to ride any distance of it with me, which ended up making it like this huge party. You know, I think in the end, I estimate I had about 3,000 people ride with me.
Whoa.
And they would just be waiting on street corners, or they'd be in a small group in a park, and I'd never know when they were going to show up. And so it was always a surprise. It was so cool.
So how did they find you? You publish your route, and then there's a tracker or something that shows you when.
Totally. So I publish my route on Komoot, and then I'd put up like my next day every day on Instagram. And then I had a live tracker that showed my location every 10 to 15 minutes. And Rafa had a landing page for that, so people could follow the tracker and then, you know, pop out and find me. The only problem was the tracker was like a little behind.
Oh,
so since I finished, I've heard so many stories of people that like tried to find me and then they were, you know, 15 minutes late and I was already ahead.
Oh, you're just going so fast. I mean, keeping that pace going, it's incredible.
Yeah, you know, and then sometimes they try to come find me the next day and they tell me about that. And I mean, sometimes it felt like a pop-up group ride. Like when I was riding in kind of dense cycling areas like the Netherlands or Germany, every town would have, you know, like 15 riders, and they'd ride me 30K to the next town. And then a new group of riders would come in. And I mean, that was so cool. You know, a lot of people I didn't know, but then people would come and they'd start talking with each other and realize they had mutual friends or know that they like lived in the same area and they could plan rides in the future. And it just felt like this cool spread of like just celebrating cycling.
Absolutely. Not only between the people who came and rode with you, who may have a connection, but also I imagine it gives you a lot of energy as well. I mean, that kind of distance is incredible. But then to sustain it, I would imagine having other people and building those connections really kept you going.
It made the whole thing a lot more interesting for sure. Because, you know, I'd ride through an area and then someone would show up and they'd like tell me about their town. And what was special about it and why they loved it. And then that made me feel more connected to what I was doing. That said, though, I think, I still rode probably at least half the time alone.
Gotcha.
Because it's so long. You know, of course, like, yeah, a place like Australia, very few people live out there. So if I did see someone, I was super surprised. And sometimes I learned they drove 10, 11, 12 hours to come find me, which I thought, that is incredible. I mean, huge hearts to go do that, you know, to find me in places like, I think it was like Lightning Ridge. Yeah, it's like way out there. But I really love that.
This goes to prove the effect and the inspiration you have on people is that they're willing to put that effort in to come and find you, maybe for half an hour cycling together or an hour, maybe two, if they just shows the spark you created.
Oh, I loved it so much. One guy came, he had like slept in his van. He pops out. He says, oh, I brought you a pineapple. Because I didn't think you would have had any fresh fruit for a while. I mean, this was so, and people would come out and they're like, you know, had baked me cookies or made me a sandwich. And I thought, this is like, I really got to see the good side of people. You know, they're so like positive and full of hope. And I thought, this is really, really cool. And it made me think, I've done this style of racing for, you know, almost about 10 years. And I thought, I've got to figure out how to incorporate more of this into that, you know, like inviting people in, making it kind of a global community event, because it's just, I've never experienced anything like it. I just thought, this is so much fun.
Yeah. And I remember a couple of stories from the podcast, and I remember you arrived in Wellington on the overnight ferry between the North and South Islands, and you were really emotional because there's a whole crowd of people waiting for you in the middle of the night.
It was amazing. There must have been like at least 40 people there waiting in the dark for me to come, and it was covered in frost. Yeah. It was well below freezing, super, super cold. And they were all bundled up with signs and they're just waiting to ride me out of town. And I started tearing up because I was so surprised, and it just meant so much to me that they were just waiting there, you know, in the dark. And then this women's past women's rally, one of the women that was at the ferry came to Arizona for the rally. I couldn't believe it, you know, and she did this ride 650K, and it's just like, it makes it, in a lot of ways, it makes the world feel more connected. You know, you have this kind of network of wonderful people everywhere that are so excited about biking.
I remember towards the end, you may not remember this because you were so tired at the end of your ride, but in your podcast, you were recalling seeing some fireworks going off in the distance and thinking, oh, that's kind of cool, a weird coincidence. And it turns out there's a guy who'd done a fireworks display for you.
So surreal.
These things happen. So the route then, you started in Chicago. You went across America. Where did you go after that?
Yeah, Chicago to New York City. And then I flew to Porto, Portugal, crossed Portugal, Spain, France, up through Belgium, the Netherlands, down through Germany, the Alps, so Switzerland, through Italy to the Balkans, across the Balkans, Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, Montenegro, to across Turkey. And then that was the end of that stretch. And I flew, I rode Turkey and then Georgia, and then flew from Tbilisi, Georgia, down to Perth, Australia. And then I think it was like nearly an 8,000K route from Perth to Brisbane. And then I went to New Zealand. So South Island, North Island, and then from the North Auckland, flew to Anchorage, Alaska, where I'm from, and then rode through Alaska, Canada, down the west coast of the U.S., and then up the Route 66 back to Chicago. And that was my route.
I was going to say I'm speechless, but that's not a good thing for a podcast. Incredible, extraordinary. And I've just done the maths. I make that about 270 kilometers a day.
Yeah.
For 108 days straight.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I also had to count like 2 days. I guess I had like 2 rest days because I was flying, so I couldn't ride at all.
Not a rest. Flying is not a rest.
That was a little hard. Was, I'd have to estimate when I think I'd make it to the airport and then fly to the next continent, because the flights only go like maybe once a day. You know, so then I was like, okay, I think I can make it around this time. And then I need to pack the bike. And then, you know, and then thinking, ooh, I hope the bike doesn't get lost in transit or broken. So once I got back to Alaska, I was like, no more flights. Phew. Okay. Super relief. You know, because that was probably the most complicated part about it logistically. The ferries in New Zealand were a bit tricky too, because it's such a small place with kind of these little, you know, things that, but then in the end that kind of made it almost like a bit more touristy for me, because I was like, no matter how I do it, I think I'm going to have to take about 7 days. So I was like, okay, I just need to make it to the ferry terminal on this day. And then, you know, so I got to kind of enjoy that part a little bit more. And it was winter, you know, it's -7 Celsius. For most of the mornings in New Zealand, it was cold, but it was so pretty.
Most of the just like, oh, I'm not going out for a ride today. I'll just lie in under the duvet. No, you're out there still doing it.
I just bought a bunch of wool at the airport because I was like, I am going to freeze.
So you've got a route and you've obviously got a plan in your head of how this will go, but over 108 days... I mean, you can't plan 108 days. One of the things we talk about here is building our adaptability and our skills in adapting to change. Yeah. I'd imagine along the way, there are just some things that occur that just your plans go out the window. Totally. And you just have to adapt, whether that's a mechanical on your bike or road closures or terrible weather or anything could happen, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
How do you cope with that?
You know, I knew it would be like that from the outset. I'd set this goal of finishing in 110 days, but I thought, that's a shot in the dark. See how long it's going to take. But really, ultimately, I thought, regardless of how long it's going to take, really, I just want to finish. But I thought, I want to set a hard goal because I like that. I like competition. I like pushing myself. So I set this goal, and then and the average had to be like 163 miles a day. So that's like 260K or something like that. And then I started riding, and in the first 3 days, I'm flying, because I thought, okay, I've got to take advantage of feeling fresh. I've got to get some extra distance in the bank, you know, and then I'll feel like a little bit more confident. And I was going so fast that I was like, ooh, I think I could get it to New York City a day faster. I changed my flight back a day. And then day four, I wake up feeling super nauseous, throwing up all over myself all day. And I was like, oh, okay. What am I going to do now? Like, off the side of my bike, just throwing up and seeing kind of sideways, having no power to pedal. But I was like, well, I don't know. I looked at, there was actually like a fireworks stand, like a concrete little booth. And I looked at it and thought, maybe I should just go in there and curl into a ball and go to sleep. But then, you know, I was like, no, I'll just keep going because I need to get distance. And that day, I think I rode like 250K or something like that. It was like not a, maybe 240. It was not a great day for me, but I was just like, I just have to get somewhere. And I, this woman came and rode with me, and she was so cool. She was like, you know what? You're gonna get to where you're going, and you're gonna sleep tonight, and tomorrow you're gonna be fine. And then she was right. The next day I was like, oh, I'm fine. I just kept on. And I made it to New York in like 7 days or something, and then flew on, and then, you know, did the full ride, came back to the US down from Alaska. And then she found me again in Oregon on like day 95. And I was like, Leanne, you're back. I was doing so much better than I had the last time she saw me. It was incredible. And several people did that where I saw them. You know, the guy I rode out with next to the first day came back on the last day because he lives in Chicago. And he's like, do you remember me? And I was like, yeah, you know, and I'd already been like I'd been around the world, and there he was. A lot of this stuff, it just felt like some kind of crazy dream, but I liked it.
I guess what you're saying is you've managed to get yourself into a mindset where you can just keep making progress, even if you are on the low.
Well, because I knew that's what it was going to come down to. I was like, there are going to be great moments, there are going to be hard moments, but really to like do my best, it's all about the average. So I was like, I need to kind of stay disciplined and just try to keep forward progress. And I think if I do that, it'll come together. And it did, you know, and that's the thing is like, you know, in halfway through Europe, I'm like, I am never going to finish this. You know, I was like 3 weeks into the ride, and I was like, oh my God, a woman comes up to ride next to me, and she's like, oh, well, you must be feeling really fresh because you're only 3 weeks into a 3 month ride. I was like, are you joking? Like every day is this massive marathon. How could I be fresh? You know, but it's like, well, in the spectrum of the project, yeah, I guess it's pretty early on, but that was not a very confidence building comment.
I guess it's all about keeping that mindset of optimism and progression and keeping going, even when things just completely change. I remember there was a story about you traveling with Rue, and one of your drivers was unable to take a car, a support car over from I think it was the Bulgarian to Turkish border. Yeah. And for a moment, it looked like everything was going to fall apart. I mean, how do you cope when something you've invested so much in mentally, physically, emotionally, then suddenly like is under threat? That must be.
Yeah, I know. I go straight into like problem solving mode. I'm like, okay. And I think that's what I always do in kind of crisis. I'm like, well, what can we do? And so this was kind of a crazy story. Rue and her driver went ahead to the Turkish border because they thought, oh, this might take a while. So they went first thing in the morning. Usually they'd stay with me in the nice morning light to take some photos. And then instead they went ahead, and then I think like 160K ahead, and I caught them just waiting in line at the border. And so I went past them because it's actually a lot easier to cross borders on a bike, even this one with like three checkpoints to get across. And then I crossed the border. Yeah. It's sunset, you know, getting dark, and I get a call from Rue, and she said, we can't cross. The border guard said, there's absolutely no way you can take this vehicle into Turkey.
My goodness.
And I thought, oh, well, what do we do now? You know, and I told her, I was like, just try to hitch a ride with somebody else, which is such a weird thing to do at a border. Hey, can I get a lift? So she worked it. She's like, don't worry about me. Just go ahead. I'll figure it out. So then she got somebody to help her call a taxi, and they picked her up at the border, took her to the next town where I met her for the night. You know, she got there. I think we both got there at about 2 a.m. And then we were like overnight, you know, texting all of our friends like, hey, do you know anybody in Turkey that can drive Roo? You know, anybody that has like a guiding business or something? And then even my parents were like, they live in Alaska, and they're like, oh, your father's hairdresser is Turkish, and she has a friend that could drive Roo. Another bikepacking friend said, oh yeah, I know a guy that has like a guiding business and he can take care of it. So then Roo gets in touch with this guy who nicknames himself Mr. Possible, and he finds her a driver to take her back to the Bulgarian border to pick up all of her camera equipment because she couldn't bring it all with her. Then he drives her back to where we had stayed. A new driver comes and drives her to Istanbul, where she meets me.
Wow.
And then the like fixer picks her up from Istanbul and takes her all the way to Georgia. And that's how we worked it out. It was crazy though, because I was like, gosh, it's actually easier on the bike, you know, but Rue was there to document me. So that was part of the project. And so we were kind of, you know, working this out together. But I mean, it's so incredible that we got to do this adventure together.
No matter how complex or how sensitive border crossings are, obviously, particularly this day and age, you can work this stuff out if you just take a moment and just one step at a time, I guess. And that's a really the only way you can approach it, particularly when you're in a project like yours.
Yeah.
And she was there to document it. And you then came down to Australia, and she's making videos and taking wonderful photographs. And I can't wait to see the book when this comes out. By the way, that's an instant purchase for me, and the film version. You came down to Australia, you realized how big it was. And I remember I love listening to someone's impressions of meeting all the animals there and being out in the distant desert and the outback. And the road trains. And there was one particular spider incident in Australia, which I think I was laughing hysterically in the car listening to it. But perhaps you'd like to share that story with us and what you thought of the wilderness of Australia.
Oh my gosh, that spider was so good. That was near the end of our trip. In Australia, we're getting farther north and I guess more tropical. And then Rue pulls up to me in the car and says, we have to leave Australia immediately. I was like, what happened? Like, there must have been something like a huge crisis for her or something globally wrong. And she told me she had had this spider. I can't remember what spider it's called, but it had landed on her windshield. And it just terrified her, the size of it, whatever. And then she was like screaming her head off and started driving like 120K an hour to try to get it off the car, even though it was like on the outside of the car. And then so she's driving like crazy. She comes up and finds me, tells me this. And then she pulls over and she's like, I'm going to get a camera out of the back really quick. And so she opens the trunk and the spider is inside the car. Just like on the fringe of the trunk.
You're doing 120Ks and it's still there. Clinging there,
and she just started screaming her head off. And I was like, oh my God, this is real. If I don't get rid of this spider, Rue is never going to get back in that car. No way. So then I go over and I took like one of her piece of equipment or a knife or something and just like flicked the spider out into the street. And then I had to like kind of walk it down the street to make sure it would run away. But it was so funny. We love the animals there. You know, I mean, I was, you know, recording this podcast, calling the animals emus, and it took me halfway through the country to learn that you're supposed to say emu. It's like a different planet for us. Yeah, it was so cool. It's so different, you know. It's like another, I thought, is this going to be like another version kind of America, and it kind of is, but with like a totally different set of animals. You're driving on the other side of the road. There's so much more open space, but people are super friendly. We went off route and ended up finding a koala, which was really cool.
Oh,
and it was pouring rain, and this poor little thing was all huddled up, and I didn't get to see one, but she did. That was cool.
It's those moments, I guess, keep you going, give you energy and shared experience.
Yeah.
And that positivity just to keep going when you're pedaling endlessly, particularly into the Nullarbor or somewhere like that.
A lot of headwinds.
Yes. I was going to say, I mean, weather conditions must be
really windy. And it is.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a lot of the things is probably better. I didn't know or didn't think much about them before the ride. Because then I just thought, I'm in the day, whatever, I'll deal with this.
I guess it all has an effect, though, because when you were coming back nearing the end, there's all this positivity, there's all this connection, there's all this activity around you, which is giving you energy. But it takes a toll, obviously. Goes without saying, 270Ks a day for that length of time. And as you were getting closer to the end, did you find that there was a moment that you just, all of a sudden it hit you, or did it just creep up on you, the tiredness?
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, I think this ride, which is, this is crazy to say, but it was less taxing than a lot of the racing I do. I took better care of myself because it was so long. I kind of set things to be a bit more sustainable. In the end, I was sleeping 7 hours a night. I was trying to eat a real breakfast and a real dinner. And that's so different from like when I race down the Rockies in the US, that's like 4,500 K. And I in the past have slept 4 hours a night and I just eat junk food. And by the end, I'm totally cooked. And this one, I was like, you know, I was like 1,000 K from the finish and realized, oh, if I pick up the pace, I could finish in 3 days. And I felt the best I've ever felt. And I thought, ah, what a gift. I can like fly to the finish line, you know. But even with that, I really hadn't thought about what it would feel like to finish until I got there. Because in the back of my mind, I had this feeling of, I can't even picture that because something could go terribly wrong even in the last minute, you know, and maybe I won't be able to finish, and I couldn't like celebrate in advance. So when I actually finished, it was like I cried, and I had this huge wave of relief of like, and yeah. I think I said three times like, it's over. Just in kind of like dumbfound shock, like it's actually over. Because you know, to be out there for 3.5 months, it felt like it was never going to be over. Or, you know, I could get hit by a car, or, you know, something could really break, or I could get injured. So I just felt so much kind of gratitude that I was able to get to the end point. You know, that was so cool.
I think that gratitude comes out through everything you do. And when you're talking about the trip and everything you do with inspiring others. And it always comes across how grateful you are for what you've got. And in well-being, gratitude is one of those tools that we try and develop,
yeah,
and skill sets, so that you do have that emotional strength. And I guess the emotions of such a ride and trip must have been huge. I know as a cyclist myself that you go through good parts, you go through dark places, you go through all the different emotions, and that's just me on my 40Ks. I don't know about what it would be like for you over that length of time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I guess though, for this, you know, for the most part, I just tried to stay like focused. I was like, okay, I need to be efficient with my time. I need to stay on the bike. But the kind of interesting part of this was, it was like a juggle with kind of being also there with the people that showed up, you know. So like usually in races, I'm like, I am not stopping. I'm never stopping. And then in this, it's like, there's a little kid on the side of the road with like a sign that they made for me, or like a drawing they want to give me. I was like, I'm stopping.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was just so much kindness in exchange. And I thought, okay, I need to get back on my bike. I can't stop for long, but I also really want to be part of this world that's happening around me. And I think that in the end, that also kept me mentally healthier because I wasn't just in my own world all the time. I was like sharing the world with other people, you know? And so that really changed it for me. And I mean, but that's also the reason why I was like, come ride with me, because then you can be a part of it and I don't have to stop and we can talk on the bike, which I always think is like the most fun way to get to know people anyway. So it was really special.
I think I imagine there were some moments where you were feeling quite down and then all of a sudden and someone that came out to ride you and just lifted you back
totally
up again.
Like riding into a terrible headwind. And yeah, I couldn't draft, but having somebody next to me to talk to be there with, that was cool. Or riding in the dark, like being in Australia and New Zealand in the winter, it'd be dark by 5:30. And then I was like, oh, you know, some people love riding in the dark. For me, I got tired of it because I couldn't see anything. But, you know, to have company, to talk with someone, or even just be in the presence of each other, it just made it better. It made me feel more alert. I also felt safer between the lights. The night sky and the stars in Australia are incredible. We have nothing like that. I mean, they must be like 100 times brighter. That was really, really cool.
It's so clear the role that positivity plays in your riding, but I guess also your life. Everything you approach is done with energy and positivity.
Yeah, I mean, I get to do what I love. You know, so it's like, it's so rare that, you know, you really get to do that and I get to do it as a job. And then I think, yeah, of course there are going to be hard parts about it. I'm trying to ride around the world. Like to have the reminder of like, I chose to do this. This is a long-term goal. So I wanted to try to enjoy it as much as I could. And that was a big part of that was, you know, making a route that was inspiring. So then in the end, you know, I ended up climbing almost 200,000 meters. not the fastest for sure. But I just thought, oh, I want to see beauty out there. And for me, that's going into the mountains, going to these kind of remote places. And that also made it way more fun, I think.
It's an element of mindfulness there when you're describing the beauty of the mountains and everything like that.
Yeah, you know, and then, I mean, because I would just, and I got to see like every sunset and there, it is just so stunning. So that was really, really special. But, you know, riding another 5 hours in the dark, I was like, oh boy. But then I would just listen to a book or something. And then maybe somebody would pop up and I had company and that was great.
Isn't that wonderful? So what do you think you've learned about yourself doing a ride like that?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, really, I learned if I sleep, I feel so much better. You know, because I could actually, every day felt fresh. And I was like, I'd wake up and I was ready to go. And I physically recovered so much more than I ever have in the past. So that was huge. I think also for me, I knew this would be like, it would add an extra element to invite people and to be that social. But I liked it. And I think it also made me, like, I grew more used to having more people around, which is a huge swing for me. When I started racing, I was 100% solo for days and days, you know, and I was fine with that. But this was new for me to have kind of these constant exchanges and be with others so much of the time. And that was cool development. It was a stretch. I definitely kind of learned, but I also liked it.
It's amazing. Everything we've talked about in our world of change and well-being on this podcast is so relevant. We've talked about adaptability. We've talked about positivity, optimism, resilience, and connection and mindfulness. And all those things wrapped up, I guess, gives you the energy just to, as you say, refresh and start another day. And when we're dealing with our listeners dealing with change and challenge, here's a huge challenge and a great role model with, if you get enough rest, you can go again the next day.
Right. And you can't finish it all at once. So it is kind of this constant crawl of like, I just have to keep going and eventually I will finish, you know. But then I was like, well, I might not. But then I had to like accept that that's also part of it too. Like you put in the work, you don't know the end result, but it's still even worth it just to do that part. Cause I thought, oh, well, if I only get to cross Europe, I still got to cross Europe. You know what I mean? And then I think that was like a reflection of like, I am like thinking every day, is this what I want to be doing? And yeah, some moments I was like, well, I don't want to be riding in Serbia in the dark on a narrow road and heavy truck traffic. But then in that moment, I'm like, well, I got to get to where I'm going to stay. You know, so there were a few days where I was like, this is actually really scary. Like the traffic in Turkey, not great, you know, but then I thought, well, I am riding in the road system. I guess it's going to happen at some point. I was very impressed though with Australia. I'd been warned a lot that, you know, I was going to have a bad time with the road trains. And actually they were totally fine. You know, I mean, they're a little scary when they pass you because it like shifts the wind, you know, with the different cars. But generally I didn't feel unsafe. You know, it worked out.
Pretty good drivers, I guess. And they're used to driving in those conditions. Totally. So as long as they see you coming.
Right. I got really good advice from one guy who was like, okay, if you see one coming towards you, just look behind. And if there is one also coming behind you, just ride right off the road.
That's pretty good advice when you've got two road trains converging.
Because usually there's like a nice gravel verge, and then I could just let them go and then I could pop back on, you know, and continue. And I thought, okay, that makes sense because it's really hard to slow those things down. They're going with such momentum. Obviously, you know, and they have these huge grates for kangaroos. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like Mad Max. But I got kind of used to that. So, and fortunately, they're like lit up like Christmas trees. You could see those things from like 20K away if the road's straight.
The mind boggles what you might do next. Do you have any, I mean, you've had this amazing goal of riding around the world. Tick that off. Where'd you go after the world? I mean,
I have so many plans. Yeah, I already have so many plans. I think it's going to be even a bigger season next year. And the first event is the Iditarod. So it's this Alaskan route that's historically a dog sled trail. And you have to ride it in the winter when everything's frozen because it goes over frozen rivers and lakes and swamps. And it's 1600K. And people have been racing it on bikes for 20 years. So I'm going to do it on a fat bike next February.
What's the temperatures then? If you
So last year I raced the shorter distance, which is like 550K, and it was negative 40 for a full day, which is the same in Celsius and Fahrenheit. It was
negative 40.
So cold. It was like a different planet. You know, like it was so cold that it was like freezing my tires solid and they were like Velcro to the snow. And like even the grease in my shifter started kind of like freezing where it was like hard to shift gears. It was, but it was also stunningly beautiful where I was wearing these like ski goggles and I'd be just tearing up under the goggles because I was like, I can't believe what I'm seeing, you know, but extreme.
Wow. I don't know what to say about that because it's plus 35 here. So
that is so hot there right now.
Think about that temperature extreme. That is an amazing challenge to take on. Wow. We'll certainly be following you for that and see what happens as you take that on. Incredible.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
So I guess when we mentioned the podcast along the way, people can still go back and listen to that, right?
And I'm planning on keeping it going for, I did maybe 4 episodes for the women's rally.
Yeah.
And then I may do it for some trips, but really I'll definitely do it for my race season next year. So every time I'm on a race, I'm going to try to keep the daily podcast going where I do 5 or 10 minutes. Yeah, it was just so much fun to do. And my mom loved it. You know, she could listen and then feel relieved that I was okay because she could hear my voice and hear that I was happy. And also, you know, good for me for the future because I'm sure I'm going to forget.
Instagram's a good place to follow you on a day-to-day basis. And it's just amazing to hear your adventures and how you approach them, which is the most important thing. And I said at the start of this conversation, I can't think of many other people with the amount of resilience and positivity that you bring to every day of your life. And still, I think that's shone through in the last 40 minutes that we've been talking. So thank you so much. And I think our listeners will take so much from this conversation, be able to apply, even if they're not cycling around the world, they might be taking on a change or a challenge and thinking, okay, well, if I just make progress and bring that positivity and build connection, then maybe I can get through that as well.
Yeah.
A true inspiration. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much. So glad we could talk.
Well, we're back in the cafe, and having talked to Lael, I'm now with Fleur. Hello, Fleur.
Hi, David. How are you? That was such an awesome conversation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Lael is an amazing person, and I felt so lucky to spend some time with her and just see her approach on life. She's probably one of the most positive people that I've ever come across.
Yeah.
And someone with so much personal resilience to do what she does. I'm really interested to find out what you made of listening into that conversation.
Yeah. I think, well, firstly, I loved hearing Lael because I could hear all the energy and the passion in her voice. So that came through really clearly. But there were so many things that aligned up with what we talk about, particularly in regards to the PERMA framework, you know, the positive psychology framework. And I think Lael epitomizes a lot of the aspects of that framework. So, you know, for example, she talked a lot about the community and the relationships and how that was a really good support to her. And that's one of the big factors in the PERMA framework is the relationship and how important support, social resources and support is.
Yeah, I can imagine just listening to her talk about how many people joined her randomly along the way, she wasn't expecting it. I mean, she put her route out there, but she didn't know when people were coming, let's put it that way. They just turned up and rode with her. I'd imagine that would be such an energy boost for that time, and just re-energize yourself towards your goal in that way.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and that's what we probably don't really think about with well-being is interactions, supportive community gives us energy, and it's part of, again, building up personal resources. So if we are facing some challenge, we've got those in reserve to really support us. So, and she was also very appreciative and grateful of those people. So that gratitude, not just for the people, but for the experience, for the opportunity, all of those things came through as well. So
yeah. It was very much what I took from it was she was sharing her experience. And yes, it was a huge challenge. And yes, she was dealing with a lot of change and having to use all her personal resilience to get this done, but it was a shared effort and it was almost like Team Lael by the end.
Yeah, and also when she was talking about, you know, she had a goal and how it's not just kind of one day, you know, to get there, it's this little incremental steps. She just kept thinking about what's the next step, and often when we're under pressure or feeling overwhelmed, that's one of the best strategies we can use is to go, instead of thinking about that thing that's ages away, break it down into what's the next thing or the next day, just get through that first. And I really liked that approach as well.
Yeah, absolutely. She was mentioning about always making progress, even if it was only a small, but it was always forward.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just wonderful.
Yes, and that also ties into the A, which is accomplishment, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, so it's like those, it's getting that sense of accomplishment along the way, on the journey, not just once you get to the final destination. She's making accomplishments, little accomplishments. Every hour that she's like progressing, there's an accomplishment. So again, that kind of taps into that positive emotions and sense of well-being if we can do that. So some amazing lessons for us to take away and apply to our own situation. You know, we might not be riding around the world or
not this week.
Well, I don't know about next year even. Anna.
Oh, yeah, you're gonna go for the record?
No, thank you. Okay. But, you know, each of us would have a goals or things that we want to achieve, and so it's really sort of recognising that we are achieving things, even if there's still more to do. So I think that's really, she really epitomised that. The other thing, David, I just wanted to point out was her can-do attitude, like that optimistic mindset. And having that can-do optimistic mindset is kind of ties into the P, you know, the positive emotion. So trying to see the opportunity in the challenge or the experience, and what when a challenge faces her, focusing on what she can control, like what can I do, not focusing on the barriers or the blockers. So, gosh, I think we've learned a lot in that one interview, David.
I certainly did. And just the mental strength to get through something like that for, 108 days, something like that, in a row without a break. I mean, she said, oh, no, I had rest days. I was doing a long-haul flight. I mean, I don't know about you, but last time I took a long-haul flight, that wasn't a rest day for me.
No, it's definitely pretty tiring to do a long hours of travel.
So. Yeah, so I'd imagine this was physical, obviously.
Yes.
Mental and emotional, and just trying to deal with everything that was the challenge of just this changing environment every day.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, look, everyone, hopefully you might have extracted even more than David and I have just kind of pointed out here today. So hopefully you really got as much out of listening to Lael as we did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a huge role model for me. And I was just so blown away by her positivity and her outlook on life, which just seems like has no end. It's just everything she does. I mean, when I talked to her, she'd just come off a bike ride with 10,000 people. Every moment is filled with something, but it's all towards positivity to others as well, which is absolutely fantastic. And I think that gives her the inner strength to do what she does, and she's an inspiration.
Yeah. Great.
It's fantastic. Well, I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. We'll be back to regular programming, as they say. We'll be back in the cafe again, but very shortly with more episodes of Coffee with Fleur. In the meantime, do listen to Lael's podcast. Believe it or not, Fleur, we do this every fortnight. She was doing it every single night from her bed before she fell asleep. And in a couple of episodes, she did fall asleep.
Wow. But don't expect that from me, David.
Don't fall asleep now, Fleur. That would be awkward.
No, don't expect me to do any podcasting from my bed.
Oh, right. No, that was never on the agenda. But yeah, check out Lael's podcast, Lael Rides Around the World. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's actually one of those adventures you could start at the beginning and just get equally as much out of it now as when it was actually occurring. So do check that out, and check out Lael on Instagram. And of course, check out Coffee with Fleur on Instagram too, whilst you're there.
Yes, do so.
Brilliant. Lovely reflections, Fleur. I'm glad you got out of it what you did. I hope our listeners did something as well that they can apply to whatever change, whatever challenge, whatever growth they want to make in their lives. And we'll see you in the cafe soon.
See you later, David.
Thanks, Fleur.